All right, well, welcome to this week's episode of Connectivity. We're kind of going old school on this one and basically just doing an episode of the newscast, minus news. So it's just us.
so it's like the newscast.
Yeah, pretty much. So we're going to kind of just sit around and talk. I'm Scott Thompson. I'm your host for this episode. Neil Ronahan was going to join us, but all of a sudden he came down with some mysterious illness. So
pussy.
He's not here. And then our
pussy
own
is not
Andy
an illness, dude.
Yeah, that's true. And then Andy Jurgen has a baby on the way, so he's kind of taking some time off now and will be for, well, I don't know, maybe a month, 2 months, who knows. So we will miss Andy very much. But
Andy, don't come on the show until your baby stops crying in the background of the podcast.
But in his stead, we have, oh man, I'm going to mess up your last name again, Carl.
It's
Why don't
cool.
you say it?
It's my name is Castaneda. Carl Castaneda. My name is Carl Castaneda, and I am leaking from more than two orifices.
Nice.
You figure it out.
Yeah, I've got the flu, and there's no AC here, and I'm tired. But I came anyway, so Neil really is a pussy.
Yeah. Deal. Yeah. And then we also have Zachary Miller.
I have a tube in my arm that's pumping meds into my arteries. Neil's a pussy.
I think we have an episode title.
Neil's a pussy. It's got a new record for episode title, 4.5 minutes in.
And then we have Mike Splins. Mike, what's wrong with you? Are you sick at all?
No. No. I'm perfectly healthy.
You're just awesome.
Physically.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, I guess this week, with the live show coming up on Saturday, which I guess if you're listening to this now, it's today. So hopefully you're listening to it and donating
hopefully
money.
You're not listening to this. I'll try, yeah. I'm editing this week. I'll try and get this episode out on Friday.
Okay, yeah, that'll Sweet. Work. And yeah, we decided to kind of take an easy week here and not too much put too much effort into this and basically just sit around and talk about the GameCube.
Sounds good.
Which is celebrating its 10-year anniversary this month.
Mm-hmm.
In just a couple of days, because the Xbox anniversary was today, and the GameCube came out like a week after the Xbox, right?
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I believe it was November 20th, I think. Was that it?
In fact, didn't Nintendo move it up to get away from the Xbox launch a little bit?
I believe
retail availability, November 18.
November 18,
2 days.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with NWR's list of the GameCube 10. The staff voted on the 10 best games for GameCube. And then after that, we'll kind of talk about why that's completely wrong. And,
please note that this list does not reflect the opinions of this panel. Yeah. Or at least me. I didn't vote on
and
it.
And then we'll throw our own games on there. So, let's just go right down the list then, guys, I guess. I think there was already some debate. We've got Super Monkey Ball was the
really
first
no
game
debate
we posted.
Here.
Yeah, there's no debate. That was a terrible
It was fun for like
choice.
The first week I had my GameCube.
When there was nothing else.
Here's the deal.
Monkey Fight. Good minigame.
Yeah, not a bad game at it by any stretch. A good game, for sure. But a top 10 game? Really? Really?
And if you're only going to take one launch game from a top 10.
Rogue Leader.
Rogue Leader, Super Smash
and
Brothers.
Wave Race are all better than it.
That's debatable. I mean, you know, like, if you're talking about launch games, I mean, Super Smash Brothers, Rogue Leader, like Zach just said.
Well, sorry, Smash Brothers was a launch window game. That's right.
Launch window, sorry.
And I forgot, that game came out right away.
Or, what's it called? What's the name?
Pikmin.
Madden 09.
Sure. Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion, which also doesn't deserve to be on that list. I don't think
no.
it is. Screw
it's
that.
Not,
game.
No.
I like Luigi's Mansion. I will stand up and defend that game.
It is a good game. Better than Super Monkey Ball.
Oh, Lord.
Oh boy.
I have to take this.
Really?
I'm kind of podcasting right now.
Okay. But yeah, I liked Monkey Ball a lot.
You talked about the GameCube?
Even in my fevered state, I know that was a bad idea.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Wait, what was a bad idea?
Choosing Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah. Oh. I think let's wait until Zach's off the phone.
Yeah, this is why we have texts, okay? This is why people can text me. They choose not to.
All right, Carl, say that fever thing again.
Okay.
Fever!
Even even in my heavily fevered state, I know that picking Super Monkey Ball was a bad idea.
Or maybe you become clairvoyant.
Have I?
In your fevered state, sure. maybe it's actually a blessing.
Mm. But wouldn't I know if I had a clairvoyance?
Maybe that's the curse of it.
We've gotten into a weird rabbit hole. Let's move on to the next one.
Yeah. So yeah, Monkey Ball, maybe not.
not so much next. We won't even give it time of day.
This next game I absolutely think should be on the list, and that's Rogue Squadron 2 Rogue Leader.
Shit, okay. Yeah.
Maybe the best looking GameCube game.
Oh man, it was so good.
One of the best looking Wii games too.
Zach.
Yeah, it looks great. Still looks good.
Now this isn't the one that had the unfoot levels, was it?
No, that was Rogue Leader 3, which you can safely ignore. Although it had the whole Rogue Leader 2 co-op.
That's what I was going to say. That's why you'd buy it. Yeah.
That was a Rebel Strike, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Yeah.
I think the thing I remember most about Rogue Squadron 2 is it's right near the end. It's the final like battle from Return of the Jedi when you're flying to the Death Star, and then there's that moment where it's just clear space and you're flying up to it, and then all the ships jump in, and then there's all the TIE fighters and all the crazy nonsense, and you're weaving through everything, and I just remember like loving that moment in that game.
I remember playing not Rogue Squadron 2, but I remember playing the demo unit at like GameStop or whatever, and they had Rogue Squadron 1 in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember like I must have played it like 100 times flying down that trench on the Death Star. Also, I was just thinking that if you didn't know anything about Star Wars and someone told you there was a video game titled Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike, you'd probably think it was a Tom Clancy game.
Well, this would have been 2001. This would have been 2001, so you might not.
Well, yeah, same naming convention though.
Oh yeah,
that's
for sure.
True.
Yeah,
but yeah. Well, any other thoughts on Rogue Squadron?
Looked pretty, played pretty well.
Lots of unlockables.
Oh yeah,
and it was hard. It was, all the shit. Yeah, it was really fucking hard.
Like, yeah, take out these two Star Destroyers basically by yourself because your wingmates are idiots.
Yeah, pretty much. But but that third one with those on foot levels was just terrible.
It's the Star Fox syndrome all over
again. I was about to say.
It really is.
Yep. Keep them in the ships.
Yeah, you'll notice a surprising lack of Star Fox on this top 10 list. Surprisingly enough. All right,
better than Monkey Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. So next on the list was Pikmin.
Now, I give Pikmin a lot of shit, but it's a good game. Like, I really only do it to piss off like the big Pikmin lovers. Like, it's a decent
Johnny
game. It's a fun game, sure.
It was pretty innovative for its time too.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's really novel.
Well, the whole thing about it was like they were able to put so many fucking Pikmin on one screen. Like, that was the big like show off for that. I think for that demo,
you got like 100 of them.
What was it? E3 2001, I guess.
Yeah, except it was 100 Mario figures. But
right. But that was the whole technology.
That was the Pikmin engine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when that like little demo video came out showing all the Marios. I actually like downloaded it through like LimeWire or.
That's awesome.
What was the other one? Kazaa. Yeah. I went through one of those. I don't know why. I just wanted to have it.
Now you can just get all that stuff. It's easy.
That one. One of the arguments that we got into for the staff meeting to hash out the top 10 was Pikmin 2 or Pikmin 1. Clearly, Pikmin 1 won, and deservedly so. But there are some staffers like J.P. Corbin who thinks Pikmin 2 is the greatest game in the world. I think he's wrong.
No, I never played Pikmin 2. I played a lot of the original.
Yeah, Pikmin 2 is a little too randomly generated for me.
Yeah.
Pikmin came out at just the right time where there weren't a lot of games. Like, the system had only been out for less than a month, and there weren't a lot of games out. So, if you wanted a game, this is the time to release Pikmin. Like, people are going to buy it because there's nothing else to buy it, and they're going to discover it and how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Do you guys think we're going to see another Pikmin anytime soon?
Yeah.
Miyamoto said we will.
Not soon, I don't think.
I think it'll be a Wii U launch title.
Really?
Yeah, no. I think you're going to see
It's been in development for so long. It's got to be ready. They got to have it ready for launch of Wii U.
I'm going to go ahead and make one of our you know, back in the days.
Launch window.
Back in the days when Mike and I were on RFN, we made a lot of, like, just blanket statements. Just like, this is going to happen, and I'm positive.
Yeah, that's right.
I say Pikmin 3 at E3 2012.
Wow.
Well, if it's going to be a launch title, it'll definitely be at E3, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so write it down.
Putting my name on the line for all it's
claim, worth. Claim, as John Gruber would say, you're making a bowl of claim chowder.
Exactly.
In the meantime, we've mentioned this on the show a couple times, but if you want to play Pikmin Light for DS, Kirby's Mass Attack is pretty much that.
That's cool.
And it's awesome.
And the Pikmin, new play control Pikmin's very good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
New play control. So Japanese.
That whole initiative kind of faded out.
Yeah. Immediately. It didn't even fade in.
It just started fading
blinked.
Okay, so next on the list, a little game you might have heard of, Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah.
Now, is this list in order?
This is the order that we're posting it on.
Man,
MWR.
This would be my number one game.
I was going to say, I don't think it's in any particular order in terms of like number of votes. Received.
Yeah, this is a game I played pretty much constantly from 2001 when it came out until 2006 when I graduated college. I probably played this game at least once a week.
It was my college
for 5 years.
Now, Mike, interestingly enough, apparently something that you started as a Super Smash Brothers thing, I then picked up later on at Osceola Hall at FSU.
Yeah.
You apparently stayed there for, what, your freshman year?
Oh, yeah, I was there my freshman year.
And you guys started playing Super Smash Brothers at the big TV in the living room. When I started as a freshman at FSU in 2007, that was still happening.
Oh, shit, are you kidding me? We totally started that. That's awesome. Yeah.
That was still
happening. We would play Halo down there, too, occasionally. We would, like, bring three TVs down from people's rooms and LAN Halo.
Yeah.
And then we realized we could just LAN Halo from in our rooms, so we stopped lugging the TVs downstairs like a week later.
Right.
Or maybe a month later.
That was still happening. Wow. And guys,
it was always, loser drops out, and people would just cycle through the lobby and play it. It was great.
Nice. And people were still taking it very, very seriously.
Oh, God, we took it so seriously.
Have they moved on to Brawl at least?
No. When Brawl came out, we had all graduated college, so I bought it like right away, and we played the shit out of it for like a month, and then we just stopped. I think, and I like Brawl. I don't think there's anything wrong with Brawl. I think it was really good. And I would, if I had been born 5 years later, I probably would have been playing that for 6 years of my life straight through high school and college.
Exactly.
But I think where Melee edges out Brawl is that Melee's just a little bit faster.
It's, well, I think it's, for me, it's just that Melee's way more familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just, I've invested so much time in it, it's pure muscle memory at this point when I play it, so.
Right.
Well, and you don't randomly trip while you're running.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. But yeah, I agree about Brawl. You know, like, I think all of us are old enough that it kind of came out just at the wrong time for us. You know, like, I don't know, there was something about Melee, like, it came out at that perfect moment. I mean, I was still in high school, but, like, we always had tournaments of Melee, like, every weekend.
Yeah. I mean, when I worked at the movie theater on campus, we would hook the damn GameCube up to the projector and get it 40 feet across.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, when Brawl came out, I was a freshman in college. And we definitely, don't get me wrong, I put a lot of time into
You couldn't Brawl. Have been a freshman in college. Oh, in Brawl. I'm sorry. I thought you were on Melee.
Brawl. Yeah. No, not in Melee. No. But, I mean, even after Brawl came out, and we definitely put a lot of time into that, we would still go back to Melee. Just because Mike's right, it is a lot more familiar just for the fact that it was a lot, it came out a lot earlier. And so I feel like I feel like Brawl never took off in the way that Melee did.
No, definitely.
I mean, Brawl was at the point.
It probably would have if the online worked.
I was just going to
say.
That's true, yeah.
Melee was at the point in, like, when I lived in my college apartment with my three roommates, we had a standing rule that if three people wanted to play, the fourth had to play.
Right.
You just had, unless someone else was there to take your spot. If we were the only four home and three people wanted to play Melee,
there's also the fact that Brawl sort of fixed a lot of the exploits that the quote unquote hardcore players liked so much.
Yeah. What is that kind of jumping thing they call it?
The wave dash.
Dashing. Fuck you if you can know how to wave dash. I'm sorry. Like, I played more Melee than anybody, but I never got to that point.
Right. Mike, did the fourth person just have to be Dazzler?
Dazzler?
Nobody gets that joke? God damn it.
No, sorry.
It's the old X-Men arcade game. There are four players, and Dazzler, for whatever reason, was one of the characters, and nobody wanted to be Dazzler.
I mean, I knew who Dazzler was. I just didn't get the reference.
We always played where, once we all got good enough at the game, it became boring to play with, like, your one or two characters that you were the best with. So we would do, like, two or three rounds of, like, pick your character. And then after that, everyone had to play random. And we would do it for, like, 5 hours of everyone playing random characters. Because then you get good with all of them. And plus, it's more fun because it allows people to win. Like, because usually in the group, there's going to be one person that's going to win, like, 60% of the games, probably.
Right.
Dude, so when you mix them up, it lets other people win, because every now and then that guy gets stuck with Donkey Kong.
Yeah. No, man, four Bowsers on, you know, at, like, one of the Donkey Kong stages with random items. Awesome.
Yeah, and also fuck you if you're Fox Only, no items, Final Destination.
Oh, yeah, like that dude at PAX that one year? Yeah.
fuck that guy.
That's my favorite when people are that strict about it. It's got to be that level. No,
no items, like, Fox Only, Final Destination. Have you guys ever seen that meme? There's a whole meme of it.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Well, I mean,
I'll edit in the audio clip if I'm feeling not lazy on Friday.
Saucy.
Mike and I briefly talked about it, I think, at one of the PAX panels, or the PAX drunk cast, it might have been, but...
I think we might have talked about it on this podcast too, but it's worth repeating.
Mike, Neil, and I were at PAX East. I think this was in 2010, and this, you know, they have like a big room where everyone can go in and play, you know, play games and such. And one guy, you know, happened to have his memory card for Melee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And we were like, "Oh, that's awesome, because that means we can get all the characters and like all the stages and all that good stuff." So he puts in his memory card. And because he put in the memory card, you then have to go like back and like load it. It doesn't load in automatically. And it says, like, would you like to load from card, which is B, or erase card, which
is
A.
Why is that A?
Mike, being the genius that he is, mashed A.
Well, I think what had happened, honestly, from what I remember, like, I was driving the menus, and then we got to that screen, and I think that guy hit the joystick, and we both hit the joystick, so it went from B back to A, and then or something, because you have to move a cursor, and that's what it is, and then you hit A.
Right.
We had both moved the joystick, so it toggled back and forth, and then I hit the button too quickly.
Okay. Well, in any case, this dude's memory card got erased with all of his progress and all of his various hardcore.
But it was salvaged somehow.
Well, here's what happened. He was very not happy.
Oh, he was ready to cry.
Did he openly weep?
No, but he looked close. He looked like he might have cried.
His head was about to steam off, like. But somehow, he was saved.
Well, what happened was he had loaded it into resident memory on another Wii.
That's right. Damn. And they pulled it off of that.
And then he pulled it off of that, so he was okay.
And then he left, probably forever.
Well, no,
he ain't coming back.
Before he left, though, he played us all in a few games, and I think it was Neil was the one who beat him.
Yeah, because he would only choose Fox, and he would be like, and his memory card was set to have all of the items off Final Destination only.
Right.
So when we loaded it up, and it just happened to go to Final Destination, like we knew it was him. We knew it was that guy.
But then we basically took a secret
telekinetic pact.
Yeah.
Between the three of us we are not going to attack each other at all.
Right.
Until this guy is dead.
As soon as he lost, he was like, "Well, do you want to play in like Final Destination No Items with like foxes?" And Neil was like, "No, because that's not fun."
Yeah, that's right. No, that's right. He had played with us on our settings. That's right.
Yeah.
And he had picked Fox. But we were all playing with items and everything. And then he was like, "Well, okay, I'll rematch you, but we have to play with Fox only, or only Fox and Sheik, and then Final Destination."
Right. So,
items.
There's your Smash Brothers story.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Before we move on from it, I just want to say that, what an amazing sequel. I mean, it took everything from the original Super Smash Brothers, and I mean, just made it 100 times better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's what the original was probably supposed to be.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I loved the original, but like this just blew it away.
There's no going back.
No.
And there's no going forward. That's how good it is.
Apparently, what are they going to do after Brawl? I mean, really?
Make it competent online?
You're funny.
I know, cute.
Well, by the sounds of it, they'll make it where you can play on the Wii U and then the DS simultaneously.
Yeah, that's going to be weird. I don't know
it's going to be very weird. Especially for Nintendo.
I think it'll be some kind of special format where, like, it'll be like a cut-down version of the game that runs on both versions, and then if there's also standalone on each version as well.
Maybe
like if you're playing
Wii
U to Wii U, you get the full experience. But if you're playing Wii U to DS, it's going to be like not the full experience.
Or maybe because the Wii U might not be able to support more than one of those tablet controllers. Maybe the 3DS will be like the other tablet controllers.
That'd be kind of weird.
Yeah. It really would.
Hmm.
And then just one final closing thought. Any of you call it Melee at any point or
no,
know anyone who
no,
did that?
No,
no.
Okay, good. I knew people and it was always upsetting.
Well, Melee is a real word, though. Like, it's not it's a made-up Nintendo word.
It's when people say Deinonychus. Deinonychus, goddammit.
That must be so annoying for you.
It's so fucking annoying. My friends say Brontosaurus to me just to piss me off.
How is it pronounced?
Apatosaurus. There is no such thing as Brontosaurus.
Wouldn't they be Brontosauri?
God damn it.
So, next up on the list, then, is Super Mario Sunshine. Sort of another divisive game here on this list.
So, the interesting thing about this game to me is that, man, none of you were here for it, but everyone who worked for the site got this game for free.
Right.
Like, we had a ton of advertising credit from, I think PlayAsia was a sponsor at the time. And, like, some of the credit was, like, in, like, store credit that we could only spend there.
Yeah.
And Billy had so much of it that he just bought everybody a Japanese copy of Sunshine.
And you've never played it in English.
No, I've never played it in English at all.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I knew it was coming, I sent my GameCube away to the guys at that great website where you could send your GameCube and they would mod it. God, I can't remember the name of it now. They're probably defunct anyway.
Was it, like, Lixang or something?
No, it was something and it had like a hyphen and an X, I think. Anyway, I sent it to them and they put the button switch mod on the back. So if the button's pushed in, it's Japanese GameCube. If the button puts out, it's American GameCube. Because the GameCube region lock was like a solder point on the motherboard. So if you installed a switch, you could toggle the circuit open and close and switch regions.
Nice.
And it was, I mean, I played the whole game in Japanese and I didn't get all 120 shines, but I beat the game. I think I got probably around 100. I mean, That's a testament to how playable that game is. That I couldn't understand a fucking word of what was on the screen.
I love that you still call them shines and not stars.
They're called shines in that game.
Right.
Even in the American version.
Oh, they call them shines? I thought they call them stars.
The difference, no, the difference is that in the American version,
they're
not stars.
They're little suns.
Yeah.
In the American version, when you finish the level, it just says shine. But in the Japanese version, it says shine get.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Shine Get, the name of our E3 DVD.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No, I like that. I like the game. It's not my favorite Mario by any means, but I'm glad they didn't just make Super Mario 64 with more levels.
Right.
What I'm glad is that they made those, like the levels would be normal, but you'd go down a pipe and you'd end up in, like, the most insane
the
platforming situation
levels,
ever.
Yeah.
I feel like those sections of that game are directly where Mario Galaxy came from.
Oh, for sure.
That I feel so happy every time I think back on that. Like, I'm so glad they made this game because Galaxy benefited so much from it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It really was just quite the departure, though.
I thought Yoshi was handled very poorly. I'm kind of mad about how they did Yoshi. It's like, I would have rather they didn't do Yoshi than do him how they did.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, that's fair, and I don't know, I mean...
By the way, I don't think I've ever mentioned this. I had lent my copy out to, what's the name of that fucking douchebag game journalist that nobody likes?
Tim Rogers?
Yeah, Tim Rogers. I think it was him. It could have been somebody else, but I remember it was a really douchey games journalism guy that basically no one really likes, but he happened to be living in Tallahassee at the time, and I had a copy of it in Japanese, and he didn't, and obviously he wanted to be cooler than me and play it, so he asked could borrow it, because he had a modded cube. It might have not been Tim Rogers. It might have been someone else.
That sounds like it might have been Brendan Sheffield.
Maybe. Brendan Sheffield? Who does he write for?
He was another one of those insert credit dudes.
I don't know who it was. You know what? I won't even say it was Tim Rogers because I don't want to defame anybody
for
saying
guy.
Who it was. But it was some fucking guy, and he was a games journalist, and he was like a semi-big deal on the internet. Like, bigger deal than I was, at least. So he asked if he could borrow it, and I said, yeah, you know, just take good care of it. Motherfucker returned it to me without the slipcover on it. Because all the Japanese games have slipcovers on them.
Yeah.
Motherfucker gave it to me back without the slipcover, and it's naked since. And the art on the front of that box was really good. And it's now my only GameCube game from Japan without a slipcover, and it drives me fucking nuts whenever I look at it.
Dude, I'm sure Billy still has like a stockpile of those. I'm sure he'll give you one.
Maybe.
Wow, yeah, dick move though.
Yeah. So fuck you, whoever you were. I knew it, you know, and I knew it when I loaned it to him. I fucking knew it. Like, I knew I shouldn't be doing this. This guy's a douche. He's too self-centered. He's not going to care enough about other people's property, and something's going to happen to it.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I guess in closing about Mario Sunshine, I will say that his Mario short sleeve shirt was a nice touch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I also like the music in that game. The music's really good.
Yes.
You know, looking back on it, it's not a bad game. It's kind of festive, and it's fun. And now having Galaxy, like, it's not so bad. You know, just going back to play it for fun. But I don't know. At the time, I definitely was disappointed. And I thought the emphasis on the water cannon thing was just a bit much.
Yeah, no, too much.
I will say I have no desire to play it ever again.
But it's an interesting mechanic. I like that.
Yeah. I got 120 shines, and then I was like, I am done with this forever.
I just feel like I wish there would have been like a proper Mario 64 sequel, and then this could have been some weird spinoff. I guess kind of in the way like, on the 64, you had Ocarina of Time, which was awesome, and then you have Majora's Mask, which is kind of quirky.
What's really
but at least you had something traditional.
What's really funny when I think about it is that the GameCube, like, damn near blasphemized Nintendo's three biggest franchises to a lot of people. Like, right. Zelda went Wind Waker, and that got so much kickback. Mario Sunshine, a lot of kickback. Metroid Prime, like, you can't put Metroid in first person. Like, and they all turned out to be really good, but initially, it was like, oh my god, they're changing absolutely everything.
Especially with Metroid, people were going fucking crazy.
I was going fucking crazy. And then I played it, and I was like, oh my god, it's so good.
Well, I have a lot to say about our next game.
Okay, well, yeah, I was going to say, we'll get to Metroid and Wind Waker in just a minute. But first, we've got Animal Crossing.
Here's the thing. Animal Crossing is important. Important enough to be on this top 10, because I don't particularly like it, but it single-handedly validates the 64DD.
Well, because Animal Forest, yeah.
Because that engine has been in use for over 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, they haven't changed it almost at all.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's true. It still looks like an N64 game.
Yeah. For, what is it now? It's been almost, 12 years that engine's been in place?
Yeah.
Damn.
So, I mean, seriously, like, I think Dan Bloodworth was one who said when he saw the first Wii, and I guess the only Wii Animal Crossing. Wow, they're still getting use out of that 64GD engine.
Nice. Because I have another college story about this game.
It has not gotten better looking in all those years, but go ahead, Mike.
While we were, because we had the GameCube hooked up, obviously, all the time. So we had, Animal Crossing because I'd gotten it in high school and like played it with my girlfriend or whatever. But we figured, well, let's start, you know, I'll erase the memory card and we'll start a brand new town. There's four people in the apartment. It'll be fun to play the game as really intended, where four people are constantly playing it. Because most people don't play it like that.
Right,
like maybe if you have a brother or a sister, it's two people constantly playing it. But Nintendo is always like, oh, the whole family will play this game. Dad will come home and he'll play it for an hour. And like, no, he fucking won't. But but we played it that way. You know, all four of us would put time into the village and leave really nasty racist things on like the bulletin board, obviously. But the like Animal Crossing, if you're playing it and you're four dudes in college, it devolves into who can wake up first.
Right.
Because you wanted to, like, we all wanted to win at Animal Crossing, and winning, the only way you could really win was to just, like, accumulate the most bells or have the biggest house or something, like, comparatively to the other three people. So it just, you would wake up early, you'd shake all the trees, you'd dig up all the fossils, you'd find the money rock, and you would just fuck everybody. And then, like, the next guy who woke up would be like, well, at least I don't even need to play today. Yeah, like, there's maybe 30 minutes of game time per day in that game for the three people in the house, and then there's, like, an hour for the one guy who wakes up first.
I feel like Animal Crossing was also one of those first games where people really started to notice the treehouse.
Their translation work?
Yeah, because it was really, really good in that game.
Yeah, it definitely was really clever and funny.
Right. I mean, they'd done some stuff on the N64 as well, but like...
And they'd done some pretty good stuff with Tingle, too.
Yeah, that is true. But I mean, that game lives and dies on its text.
Game, I think, to me, that most most like the Treehouse's best work was probably Mario and Luigi on Game Boy Advance.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first one that came out where it was like, this game is wicked funny.
Yeah, right. It is.
Yeah, it was. It was really, really good. And probably the best Mario RPG.
Could be.
Oh, yeah.
Superstar Saga was good, too. I haven't played the third one.
It's better than the third one.
Yeah, I would put it up. I'd put it right up against the Square RPG, and definitely better than any of the Paper Mario games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's next on our list?
moving right along is Metroid Prime, a game we were just talking about a minute ago.
Don't like it.
Yes.
Don't like it.
Wow.
No. Okay, you can't be on our podcast anymore.
Yeah, you're no get Andy replacement now.
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I get it. It's good. I just don't like it. It's here's the thing though. I don't like Metroid. So
okay, now we have James on the podcast.
No, it's fine. Look, I'm not doing.
Fuck you. Okay. You don't like Metroid.
I get it. Like, I get the appeal. I remember. Actually, I have avoided Metroid for so long. I think Mike actually gifted me Super Metroid. He's like, no,
I bought it for you. Yeah,
you're gonna play this and you're gonna like it. And I played it for like an hour. And like it.
Yeah, no, it takes at least 3 or 4 hours to really get hooked into Metroid. Once you see how big the world is and how the mechanic works, then you're like, oh, I get it. What's funny is that you really liked Arkham Asylum, didn't you?
Yeah, I liked it.
That's a fucking Metroid game, dude.
No.
Arkham Asylum is even more so. It's such a Metroid game. The different sections of the Arkham facility are all sectioned off and you can't get to them until you get a certain power up. That's fucking Metroid, dude.
I don't know, dude. Put Batman in Metroid, maybe I'll get excited, but, like, yeah,
it's just
a
3D Metroidvania game from the third person. If they made a third person Metroid, I would want it to play exactly like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I don't know. I've tried to get into Prime, like, multiple times, and I get it. It's well made. It's gorgeous. Clearly, a lot of time has been into it.
Let me ask. Is it that you don't like just Metroid, or is it that you don't like the Metroidvania genre as a whole?
I don't like the Metroidvania genre as a whole.
You like Batman.
Oh,
but I do like Batman, because he's Batman. You know? And that helps a lot. I do like Batman.
The combat in Asylum is really good.
Hey, real quick rat hole. Have any of you guys played Uncharted 3?
No.
I played the second Uncharted.
Oh, Uncharted 3, if you play it, there are so many fist-fighting sections in the game that you could tell, like, these guys must have played so much fucking Arkham Asylum, because it's the exact same idea.
That's funny.
It was not in Uncharted 1 or 2 to that degree.
Yeah, but as far as Metroid goes, though, like, yeah, I can totally appreciate it as being well-made and totally deserving of all the praise that it's gotten. It's just not for me.
All right, I get it.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite GameCube game.
Oh, easily mine.
Mine's Melee.
Melee's right up there too, but I think I've talked about this before, but it kind of came out right at this perfect time where I think I was like either a junior or a senior in high school, and I had like my own little like den set up in our basement where I had like my computer next to like a TV, and so I would just stay up all night and like be on AIM talking to people and then like playing Metroid.
Nice.
And yeah, it's just
AIM,
a game that
remember
really
that
sucked
shit,
me.
Man.
Yeah,
man.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it was beautiful, and the music especially.
It did have very good music.
It was just great.
I'll tell you how obsessed I was with this game when it first like was being released. I'd played it at E3 that year. I played it like the demo. I ran through the demo like probably 5 or 6 times in just one E3. Because like back then, like, well, I guess you still kind of can, but that year all the games were like in their own little booths, so there wasn't like a giant line to wait in to play all the Wii games or whatever. So I could flash my badge and get I could be the next person to play that console.
Yeah,
that year is how they did it. So I played like 5 or 6 times, and eventually I got to the point where I think I was within like 30 seconds of the time that the Treehouse guys could complete the demo in. And then, weirdly, when they were doing the GameCube promotional tour a couple months later, they had all these cube clubs set up around the nation.
Yeah.
And they had one set up in Tallahassee. I guess because it's a big college town, obviously, so maybe that's why they picked it. Former staffer Jeff Shirley, a.k.a. DeGueo, drove down from Georgia, and he crashed at my dorm room for a couple days. And we went to the Cube Club with we had VIP passes for it or whatever, which didn't really mean anything. Except that we got to skip the almost no line, and they gave us, like, a bunch of free water and all that other shit. But I played the demo, like, the night before, and I set the time on it. And then no one beat the time like for the entirety of the Cube Club.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
It's the game that really honestly got me into Metroid.
Yeah.
Me too.
I played Super Metroid
until it,
but I didn't get it.
Yeah, me too.
And it took Metroid Prime, and then I became a huge fan.
What I will say of Metroid Prime is that it very much, you know, obviously my playtime with this series has been limited, but it feels the same across different platforms despite being in different perspectives.
Oh, yeah, they did that perfectly.
You know, it Super Metroid and Metroid Prime, despite, you know, one being 2D and the other one being, you know, in first person into 3D, feel like they play exactly the same.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? And that is an accomplishment.
Do you guys feel like if a game like Gears of War, because Gears of War, like, was the game that really redefined third-person games?
I don't think
do you
it
feel
did.
Like if, what? You don't think it did?
I think a game later on in this list.
Third-person shooters, I should say.
I would say I would say a game later in this list does that way better than Gears of War.
But no, what I'm saying is that if let me say, both of those games came out after Metroid Prime. So I guess my real point is that if a game like Gears of War or like a big third-person shooter had come out before Metroid Prime, do you think Metroid Prime would still be first-person?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I do.
I would love to see it.
Well, Metroid Prime was.
Yeah, but they decided they couldn't get it to work right.
Right.
I think if they had seen some of the things in those third person games that came out later, if they'd seen some of those things that might have influenced them, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a new Metroid game come out in third person.
Well, Metroid.
I hope so. Not counting Other M, because Other M plays on a 2D plane, essentially.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't play like Gears of War or like Resident Evil 4 or something like that.
I just want to add that I think Metroid Prime is like just probably the most pure Metroid game, if that makes sense. I feel like the isolation is perfect in that game. That's something they've really gotten away from.
And the scanning stuff is so
great. The intimacy of the visor is like kind of crazy when you think about it from like a narrative sense. And how it really creates such a sense of character.
Right, and that couldn't have been done with third person.
Yeah.
Right, and that was so great. Like seeing Samus's face flash across it, you know.
My favorite moment in the whole freaking game.
When there were bright lights, or even like rain.
Yeah, you could just catch your eyes darting back and forth.
Yeah,
that is brilliant.
Reflecting on the visor and stuff. I mean, it was so good. I don't know why they got away from that.
Being able to read the, especially leading up to the Omega Pirate, you could read all the data entries about it, and it's like how it's so
system
freaking
log,
powerful,
yeah.
And they had to put it into hibernation because it killed everybody. And then you see it, and you're like, oh, fucking shit.
Yeah.
Was it in the first Prime when they, like, hinted towards the, like, what would end up not ever being a DS game? What was it? Yeah. Was it Metroid?
Metroid Dread.
Metroid Dread.
Metroid Dread, sure.
Yeah, and they
that
1E3 thing.
That was in Corruption.
Was it in Corruption?
Yeah.
Must have been just a little call out. But yeah, they had that Metroid 4. It was just called Metroid 4 running on Game Boy Advance at like the first E3 I ever went to. It was just a demo video of like Samus running through a hallway. You couldn't even touch it.
Right.
And everyone was like,
didn't she meet up with the evil Samus at the end?
No, because then that would have been Metroid Fusion.
Yeah, because then that happened in Fusion.
Yeah, yeah. Fusion came out years later. But no, Metroid Dread is a game that has never come out.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Man, I would love a real, like, gorgeous 2D, 3DS Metroid game.
The one Metroid game that I have that I sort of do want to try is I've heard that Zero Mission, regardless of whether you're a Metroid fan, is really good.
It is.
Zero Mission's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so aren't you getting it? No, Fusion's coming out for the Ambassadors whenever that happens.
It is. Yeah.
Fusion's got a month and a half.
Carl, I think you'd like Fusion more because it's more linear.
Yeah, Fusion is more linear.
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. And honestly, if you have no real attachment to the story or the character of Samus and of Metroid, I would say Other M probably isn't bad. The gameplay in Other M is great. It's just the cutscenes that really kill it. But if you don't care
about Metroid at all,
it probably won't bother you.
If they just took out all the cutscenes and they released it on 3DS, I'd buy it again. That game would look really good on 3DS.
Now let's get to the best Zelda ever released.
Yes,
Four Sword Adventures.
We are of one mind, Carl.
Yeah, Wind Waker is by far and away the best Zelda to be released.
I'm stoked because all the people that said that are now saying Skyward Sword is better.
You know what?
Then I am
stoked.
Even if it's not, even if it's not better than Wind Waker, the fact that anybody could even compare it means it must be at least like really great.
Sure.
I'm just glad that Skyward Sword visually sort of is reminiscent of Wind Waker.
It's sort of halfway there.
It's perfect. You know? The way they went with like this watercolor impressionist look, it's like insane.
Yeah.
It's going to be the best looking Wii game for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, nothing matched the sort of the atmosphere, the visuals, the story, you know, and then also, I think it's also the tightest in terms of gameplay.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people decry the sailing, but I didn't really have any problem with it. I liked it.
I liked it. It was very exploratory.
Absolutely. And plus, you got the warp song, like, pretty soon into the game, yeah, so if you really didn't want to sail, you didn't have to.
Plus, it was awesome finding random little islands with, like, little challenge.
Yeah.
You know, little challenge stuff. That was great. And,
I mean, let's be honest. Nothing beat finding the underwater, like, sunken.
That's the best part. When you find that, you're just like, holy shit.
I mean, that's the greatest moment.
It's the most cathartic scene in any Zelda game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the best sequence in any Zelda game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just the animation is so incredible.
Really tight, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really tight. Have you guys ever seen this game running in 1080p on like a Dolphin emulator?
No.
It's really incredible. Pretty. It is incredible.
Nice.
Like, because the thing is, the game was, you know, because of the fact that it's cel-shaded and everything's very flat, and so the textures are meant to look very sparse.
Right.
You can up-res that to 1080, and it doesn't lose any of its flavor.
Yeah, and plus, because of that, they had a lot more memory to work with, and because they weren't using as many textures, they could use more polygons. Yeah. So everything looks better on the base model as well.
Right.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's a game that, when you upscale it to HD, looks incredible.
Yeah, like, I kind of want to do that now.
Oh, I would say you should. It's worth it. Yeah, I mean, also, just a – and the thing is, it betrays its own sense of style every once in a while, and it'll surprise you. Like, at the end, when you fucking stab Ganondorf in the forehead.
Yes! That's totally, like, I didn't know it was coming. And then I was just like, oh, my God, this is the most violent ending to the cutest-looking game.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I remember getting to the end of that Zelda game being like, if this is the last Zelda, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it'd be like if Mario chainsawed Bowser's head off or something. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, not even that. But like, when you're at the very end, and it's like everyone sort of sets out at sea, and the themes are rousing. Also, think it has probably the best music.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, of all these Zelda games, I mean, it's a shame that that wasn't the game where they went orchestral, because it was pretty incredible.
Man, I lost my copy. I remember when I first joined the show back, everyone was talking about Zelda, and I really wanted to replay it, and my copy is lost.
Yeah,
I would replay mine if I had a non-broken Wii.
I've been thinking about tracking down a copy again and playing it through it, because it's probably in my top five for favorite games of all time.
Oh, I had the gold box and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the gold box too.
And it's fucking lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was actually the game that I got with my GameCube. And
oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, because I didn't get my GameCube until 03, so, yeah, and what a great way to start, right?
it was really smart of Nintendo to offer that GameCube,
demo disc?
Ocarina of Time pre-order bonus. Right. Because that really psyched me up for Wind Waker.
Yeah, especially because the game is so directly tied into Ocarina of Time, right. As is Skyward Sword.
When I got it, it was when they were having the promotion for the GameCube where you could get a GameCube and one game. And so it was either Star Fox Adventures.
So bad for everyone.
Metroid Prime, Zelda, or I think...
Mario?
Mario Sunshine. Yeah, I think it was Mario. And I think I made the right choice.
Oh yeah,
yeah, definitely. Yeah,
probably.
Can we just take a moment as a side note to just talk about how insanely good a year 2003 was for the GameCube?
Man, was
Nintendo's never released Mario, Metroid, and Zelda all in the same year ever.
They didn't that year was either. Just mind blowing.
Even the fact that we're getting Zelda and Mario this year, like on different systems, sure. But Mario 3D Land is great, and Skyward Sword is supposedly great. The fact that we're getting two of them in one year is astonishing enough. The fact that we ever got all three is unheard of.
Yeah.
Well, we got all three within a 1 year time span, but didn't Prime come out in 2002?
Yeah. No, because they were all at. Did it? They were all at E3. They were all at E3. They all came out at the same year.
They didn't all come out in the same year. I don't think they all came out in the same year.
They all came out within 1 year from the first one releasing. All three were out. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, that 1 year time span was. Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of great games. But yeah, I mean, as far as Wind Waker goes, I mean. It's unmatched for me as far as other Zelda games go. Love Ocarina, love Majora's Mask. You know, there are parts that I like about Twilight Princess, but for me, it just doesn't get any better than Wind Waker.
Nope.
Yeah.
So good.
Yep. So and then good. Also, again, I have to say, like, that lock-on system and the parry system just worked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it worked really, really well. And that's something that just felt off in Twilight Princess.
Yeah, and there were too many. It got too complicated with all the special sword techniques.
Yeah. Yeah. It just really, really worked. And then, like, you know, we didn't really even talk about the art style, but it was so evocative while being simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it has, for me at least, you know, the best characters. And it's probably, for me anyway, my favorite portrayal of these characters, especially, like, Ganondorf.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it ages so well because of that art style.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
I haven't played it or Twilight Princess in a while, but I bet putting them next to each other, Wind Waker still looks better.
Well, yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, Twilight Princess is a GameCube game. Remember that.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Sure, but I mean, putting them side by side, you know, Wind Waker looks far
Wind Waker's going to look better.
Yeah. I think you put Wind Waker side by side in 1080p against a lot of current generation games, it still looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess speaking of Link, our next game on the top 10 here is Soul Calibur 2.
I played a lot of Soul Calibur 2.
Me too.
I only played a medium amount of it. All that time was Smash Brothers time. Why would I waste it on a lot inferior fighting games?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you there, Mike.
It's probably my favorite Soul Calibur game.
It is.
It's the best Soul Calibur game. Yeah.
Although that Dreamcast game is still pretty damn good.
It is. I actually still play that. It's really good.
Yeah.
The thing about Soul Calibur is that they're always the same modes. Like, they change the names and they might change the window dressing, but really they're all the same game.
Sure.
That kind of bugs me.
That's how most fighting games are, I feel.
Well, that's true, yeah.
But, I remember one weekend I tried to finish that fucking story mode.
Yeah.
And it's the one where it's like, I really think it's just endless.
Because you have a different like ability or modifier in each fight.
It's basically just a maze of fights.
Yeah.
You remember that? I
played through the whole thing.
Really? Does it end at one point?
It does.
Oh my God.
You just get like concept art.
Forget it. There must have been at least 500 of those fights.
Oh, there were tons.
Yeah. And I just gave up eventually. But the game was a lot of fun. And, you know, there were tons of different weapons and costumes. And I mean,
and you could play as Link.
Could play as Link. Yeah,
Link
exactly.
was stupidly overpowered.
Yeah, he was really good.
That made the GameCube version the definitive version.
Oh, yeah.
What were the other ones? You could play as, like, was it? No, Darth Vader and Yoda were.
No, it was Spawn on Xbox.
Spawn on the Xbox.
Heihachi in.
Yeah, who doesn't even have a damn weapon?
No.
Yeah, he has gauntlets.
Yeah, if you're looking between those three.
He has Wonder Woman gauntlets.
Now, if the Xbox instead had a Darth Vader, then there's a compelling argument for the Xbox version. But
that was Soul Calibur 4.
I know, but if that had been Soul Calibur 3, then you'd have a compelling argument for picking the Xbox version, but.
Right.
GameCube version of Soul Calibur 2, definitely the best.
All three versions of 2 had that kind of stupid-looking McFarlane monster.
Necrod, yeah.
Necrod, yeah.
Yeah, he sucked.
He was also overpowered. I think he just used everybody's moves or something.
I think so.
Wasn't he a
combination
of everybody?
No, that was...
That's the other guy.
Starts with a C.
Okay.
Something.
I think that's Shang Tsung.
Basically, yeah.
Is it the pirate guy? Cervantes.
No, Cervantes
has
his own
moveset.
Yeah.
That was the other thing about Soul Calibur 2. There were a lot of palette swap characters, kind of.
My friend always liked Yoshimitsu because you could bounce around like a pogo stick on the sword.
That's right.
Yeah, that was pretty funny, yeah.
I always played as Raphael because he had that really, really cheese move where you could tap someone on the head 3 times with the rapier.
Yeah.
That's the best move. Tap, tap, tap! Nothing gets past it. You can't block it almost ever.
Right. I usually played as Ivy.
Well, if you're good at Soul Calibur, Ivy is probably the best character.
She is. If you're good with her, you win all the time.
Yeah.
I was never that good with her. She was just pretty.
So what's next on our list?
She had some very exciting features, shall we say.
She did.
Yeah.
And then the final game on the list is Resident Evil 4.
Here's the thing about Resident Evil 4.
Good.
I don't think it's like the number one game on the GameCube, though.
It's close, though, and here's the thing. I feel like Resident Evil 4 was one of the first games that, for at least of the modern era, was as much fun to watch as it was to play.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like you, like, I feel like so many games owe exactly, like, their gameplay style to Resident Evil 4, Dead Space, Gears of War, Uncharted. Like,
not so much Uncharted.
I think Uncharted as well. It's so cinematic.
Uncharted, I think, is more about platforming, though.
I see what you're saying.
The shooting
but...
parts of Uncharted, yeah. But it is, Uncharted is, I guess, in that way that you want to watch it because it is a goddamn action movie.
Yes.
Right.
It's better than most of the action movies to come out in the theaters.
Watching someone fight that El Gigante for the first time is like
El
watching
El Gigante!
An action movie. Yeah.
I like the way you say that, Carl.
El Gigante.
El Gigante!
it's like watching an action movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of moments like that, even when you first cross the lake and you gotta fight the big fish.
Yes.
Sure.
Or shark, or whatever it is.
The village chief, when he turns into that fucking spider thing.
So awesome.
Oh man, that's a hard... Yeah, in the barn or whatever.
Yeah.
Also, what was with that little midget dude? Like, I still don't get that. Resident Evil always takes some weird turn at some point where I'm never really paying enough attention to this story to begin with. And then something like an albino midget from, like, 1700s France comes out, and I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I like it in that way. Like that's a thing. Like that's a comforting part of Resident Evil is you know at some point some like weird like albino anemic evil villain is going to come out.
Exactly.
Happened
yeah.
in 5.
And talk about another like departure from the norm. But I mean, Resident Evil 4 was a complete reworking of the Resident Evil formula.
It's the first Resident Evil game that's good.
Yep.
Yeah, like
I will agree with that.
Which is funny because Resident Evil 2 is like revered among PlayStation fans. Like it's one of the best PS1 games, but it's like nowhere near as good as Resident Evil 4.
It's unplayable. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I remember when 4 was going to come out, I bought the double pack of evil or whatever they
as,
which was Remake and Resident Evil 0.
Yeah,
and you also got a demo for 4.
That's right.
And I basically bought it for the demo.
Yeah, I bought Resident Evil Remake because I thought, oh man, this looks beautiful. Like, it looked really beautiful. Granted, it was all pre-rendered backgrounds, so that's why it can look so good. It's Resident Evil's claim to fame until 4.
But thanks to those pre-rendered backgrounds, it allowed them to really flesh out, like, the character models.
Yeah, too bad they didn't flesh out the characters outside of their models.
Well, yeah.
I am the master of unlocking!
That remake's really good, though.
Yeah, I couldn't play it. I got like probably 2 hours into it, and I was like, I fucking hate this.
I can't play
it's
them
a camera.
In the old style.
It's a
camera.
Good thing.
Tank controls. I can't do it.
Yeah, but 4. I mean, 4 is fantastic. You know,
4 is great, and the Wii version is phenomenal.
The Wii version is very good. Yeah, I would say the Wii version is probably the definitive version.
Oh, easily. Yeah.
You know, it's because here's the thing. It's got the because obviously we know that there's the GameCube version, there's the PS2 version, which has all the Ada missions, but it's looks way worse. Load times are way longer.
Yep.
But the Wii version not only has all those Ada missions, it has the original graphics. It's the only version that has true widescreen.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the other versions had letterboxes.
Yep. The GameCube one didn't. Didn't it run in progressive widescreen?
It was not running. It had it still had letterboxes.
Oh, I guess I wouldn't remember because I didn't have a widescreen TV back then.
Yeah, they did it because the GameCube could literally not process all the things on the screen at once, so it had to have the litter box so that, you know.
It made it look good. Made it look more cinematic, though.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It
also gave you a wider field of view, which was nice.
Right. But
And I mean, I just recently wrote the feature on the Capcom 5, so I do kind of want to mention, you know, what a disappointing turn of events that was for Resident Evil 4 and how all along, I mean, they promised that this was going to be exclusive to GameCube and there was no way it was going to get ported.
You knew
to
it was
going to
eventually.
And then 2 months before the game comes out, they announced that they're going to port it to the PS2 like 9 months later.
Right.
Well, because it had been announced like years prior, back when the GameCube might have still been a viable platform, but by the time it came out, it was squarely in third place.
I remember seeing in an issue of like GamePro or it might have even been... hardcore game fan, the screenshots of Leon in a spaceship. Remember that shit?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, one, they ran those trailers for it, and I remember those trailers, and the game ended up being absolutely nothing like the trailers.
Yeah. It was.
What were the other Capcom 5? It was Killer 7,
Beautiful Joe, Pin Number 3, and Dead Phoenix.
Oh, yeah, Project Number 03.
That's right.
Yep.
Right.
Dead Phoenix. What was that one? I don't remember that
one. Dead Phoenix was this game where a winged man is basically a little bit like Lair combined with like
that.
Yeah, it was like it was Panzer Dragoon basically, and yeah, it looked really good. I thought it looked cool.
Yeah, the stages were completely no, it was canceled.
That's why I don't remember it.
I wrote about this in my feature, but when it was kind of in limbo for a while, I think that was the first instance where IGN sort of put out there that it might be like a Kid Icarus game.
Sure.
That like it was going to get retooled to be a Kid Icarus game, and then after that, I feel like every month IGN like was saying something about how like,
it's going to be Kid Icarus
on the way. Someone's working on it. It's coming.
Bullshit. Link bait.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
But ultimately, hey, we got Piano 3, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's state exclusive.
Dance shooter.
So. Yeah, exactly.
But that was the only one, yeah.
So it sounds like we're mostly wrapped up on these, but I was wondering, of these are the 10 that the site picked, but if there's one game that you could have included on this list, what would you all pick? And I have two, so I'm really hoping someone says one of mine, so I'll go last.
Okay. I would say...
about this.
I'm not going to say Killer 7 because...
Yeah.
No.
That would be too obvious.
It would be too on the nose. I'm going to say Tales of Symphonia.
That was really good.
It was a really, really good RPG on a system that did not have very many RPGs at all. It was like 50 hours long, really, really meaty. Obviously it's a JRPG, so the story was shit, but it was really, really fun and didn't fall into the trap of the genre at all, really. So I enjoyed it a lot.
As a quick side note to that, Skies of Arcadia Legends is also...
Oh, that was really good. Fuck.
Well, I think of that as more of a Dreamcast game because that's where I first played it.
It's vastly more playable on GameCube because they cut down on the random...
They cut down the random encounter timing, which was really nice. One of my bitch ex-girlfriends stole my copy of that. And my copy of Eternal Darkness, but thankfully our good friend Chris Kohler had like 6 copies of Eternal Darkness lying around, so he just sent me one because he's a good fella.
Yeah.
Man, Eternal Darkness was good. I'm surprised that that didn't make this
that,
list at all.
That was one of my two.
It's,
if I could only add one to this list, it might be that.
I don't think it holds up very well at all.
It maybe not, but at the time it was.
No, I think it's pretty amazing for the lasting mark it had on the industry. Like, insanity effects are still happening in games. Yeah. Like, on a much smaller scale, but I mean, if that game doesn't happen... bring up Arkham Asylum again. Like,
oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
With all that Scarecrow stuff.
Yeah.
And now I think
there's
I
a
know
scene
how
in much Unch- that there's a scene in Uncharted 3.
Darkness,
now, can spoiler. I call what Mike's game is?
No, don't call it yet.
Okay.
Real quick spoilers, without those sanity effects in Eternal Darkness, fast forward 30 seconds if you have not played all of Uncharted 3. There is a scene in Uncharted 3 in which you are dosed with hallucinogens and have to wander your way through an Arabian market.
That's awesome.
And the whole screen is swimming. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
Okay, Carl, what do you think my game is?
Beyond Good and Evil.
No, it's not.
Oh.
That's mine.
Oh, okay, all
right. I've got like.
I don't think I would really. Most of the games I wouldn't. Both of the games I'm thinking of are both exclusive. Not first party, but they're both second party. There's a clue for you.
My main one that I think should have been on here was Ikaruga.
Good game, but I was not good enough to play it. I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I loved it. I got to the point where there was a mode in it where you could turn your TV sideways. So
what's
that
it called?
Play it.
What's it called? We played it at John Lindemann's house the other at PAX this year, like that, because he had it for the Xbox and he had a widescreen, so you can just turn the widescreen up.
Yeah, nice. Even back with the GameCube, I had a TV. It wasn't widescreen, but it had flat edges on all around it, so I was able to flip it over onto its side and play that way. And yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, that game was great. I mean, the rebirth of the shoot 'em up.
Speaking of IGN again, our frothing demand for this game increases. Classic. That was quoted for years, man.
But yeah, that game was great. And then like my half serious one would be Donkey Konga.
Donkey Kong. Ooh, Donkey Kong really
Donkey
good.
Kong
Jungle
Konga,
Beat.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong Jungle Beat.
Good.
Not a full game, but it's really good.
Donkey Konga was that first time where like what eventually would happen while I would play Rock Band, like when I first experienced that, like just hitting the bongo and rhythm, especially with two players, and like having it click and really like be with the beat and the rhythm of the song. I mean, I just remember like this genuine smile playing that.
I bought when Donkey Konga 2 came out in Japan, they put out a bundle where you got Donkey Konga 1 and 2, and I think you got two sets of bongos, or maybe I just bought a second set of bongos. So we would play with two players, but then I got the review copy for the American version, and Nintendo sent it with two bongos because they wanted you to play it multiplayer. So sure. I had four bongos going. It was really stupid fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's
and cool. It was great when I could get lots of free shit.
Sure, of course.
So my two, I already mentioned Eternal Darkness. That was one of them, which I think is amazing, and I kind of want to replay it. Like I played it for like 3 years. I played it every year on Halloween. Like, I would just blitz the game in one day. It was great. Yeah. But the game that I would really add to this list is F-Zero GX.
Oh.
Because it's just so damn good.
Almost on the list. I don't know. I voted for it a lot, but I don't know why it didn't get on.
I wish I'd been voting. It probably would have beat out Monkey Ball then.
Oh, God. I mean,
it's easily the best F-Zero game.
I mean,
it's
talk about
so
hard.
Good, and it's insanely
beautiful.
Hard.
It's such a beautiful, good-sounding game.
And it ran so fucking fast. Like,
but it is really
blows
hard.
My mind how fast that game ran.
Yeah, didn't it run at 60 frames?
Yeah, it ran at 60 frames, but not only that, it's just because of that and because just they made the gameplay so fast anyway, it was just, that game is good. Even though it's not...
The underwater tube level's, like, amazing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't have the Death Race mode as good as F-Zero X is. Because I love Death Race on F-Zero X. We just run around that circular loop and just kill everybody. I would play that for hours.
Oh, yeah. I played that a lot, too.
I wish Death Race had made it in. There was, like, one of those challenge levels where it's kind of like Death Race, but it's, like, not the same, and it's time-limited, and it's really difficult.
Fucking hard. All of those story...
I think that's the Samurai Girl
pretty
one.
Hard. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, the story mode stuff is insanely hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game, oh, I love that game.
Well, Zach, you want to talk about Beyond Good and Evil?
So friggin' good. it is multi-platform, but I think the GameCube version is the one that runs the best.
From what, another old E3 story, because I was at that E3, I remember talking to the Ubisoft people because I was on their appointment, and both Prince of Persia and Beyond Good and Evil ran on the same engine, like the same base engine. They called it the Jade engine, so I guess it was built for Beyond Good and Evil first. But yeah, I think they had said something like it was built ground up for the GameCube first.
Nice.
Because I guess that's where Michel Ancel?
Ancel.
Yeah, wanted to put it. It probably felt aligned most with the GameCube, which it does. That game.
I remember that's probably why
it runs the best.
Project BG&E.
Yeah.
I
think it was still called that at E3, I think.
Yeah. And I liked it because it was one of the first games I ever played that really made an effort to have an emotional connection with all the characters. Like, you gave a crap about all of them. Or the heroes, anyway.
That's something Prince of Persia, Sands of Time did, too. Developed at the same time.
I have never played that.
That's the best one. The other ones are shit, but that one is really good.
Yeah, the Sands of Time was the only one where they're like, look, the combat doesn't really matter. It's platforming.
It's about platforming and story. Like, Jordan Mechner wrote that one.
Yeah.
He created the original Prince of Persia. He wrote Sands of Time. He did not write Warrior Within, clearly, or whatever the third one was.
Two Thrones or Two Towers.
Well, the 2008 one is the one
I
love that.
Is that the remake one? No, that one was...
Two Towers at the Lord of the Rings.
2010.
Yeah. Oh, well, no.
Or is that the one where you have the girl with you, where it's like Ico ripoff? I never played that one.
Good. Beyond Good and Evil had really good environmental stuff. It was a Zelda game, really.
Yeah.
And I love the photography mode. It just taking pictures of stuff and kind of Pokemon Snappy. And, you know, it is a mashup of a lot of different games, but I think they pull it off really well. It was just really good looking, and I love the art direction, and it pisses me off that they are supposedly...
making a sequel.
Well, they are. The sequel's been in development forever, but supposedly they're not going to continue it if Rayman Origins doesn't sell well, which is a terrible idea because it won't sell well at all.
It's just heard that. Yeah.
Well,
I hope that's just a rumor.
There is one game I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, and that is the fantastic licensed fighter on the GameCube. The Naruto Gekitu Ninja Taisen series.
That is actually really good from what I've heard. I just hate those games.
Yo, God, they're so fucking good, though. Like,
yeah, I had one or two of those. They actually were really good.
If you imported them, the fourth one is, like, as good as Smash Bros. Is.
Hmm.
Lofty claim.
It is very, very, very good. Only the first two GameCube games got imported. And the second one's very good. The first one's okay. But the Wii one, I think, or I guess the first Wii fighter, is an import of the third game.
Yeah, I think I played that with you, Carl.
Yeah, and it's quite good. So yeah, those games were fantastic. If you can still import the fourth Naruto GameCube fighter, as good as Smash Brothers, absolutely.
That didn't end up becoming one of the Wii ones?
No, I don't think so.
By then, the Naruto fad was over.
They changed them because they had to put in like new story items, and they had to put in the waggle, so it didn't really translate anywhere.
That's true.
But Ty Sugar, noted fighting game aficionado, gave it a 10.
Yeah, if that guy gives it a 10. Cat drugs. That's one of his new thing.
Yeah, but yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Rad. All right, well, I think that'll do it for this week's episode then.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot of GameCube talk. I know Neil wanted to talk about the GameCube, so maybe next week when he's back, we'll
do it on the live show.
Yeah,
live show. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Live show.
Yeah, again, if this is out on Friday and you're listening to it now, tune in on Saturday and donate some money.
Yes.
If we make enough money, we're going to do a live Jeopardy show.
I should write questions be good. For that.
And if you get to the very end, the last hour is just called Shenanigans, and it's my hour to do whatever I want.
Oh, oh man! If it's close, I may pay to listen to that. If you do it, Carl, you have to promise me you'll be fucking ripped drunk.
Oh, I'll have a bottle of gin at the ready,
or at least just have a temperature of 103.
Get a bottle of Bitches Brew out.
Oh, dude, I've got two bottles chilling in my fridge.
I hate you.
All right, well, so thanks a lot, guys, and I guess for Carl, Zach, and Mike, I'm Scott, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.